So living in Syracuse, one might think that the Unitarian Universalists are super good at welcoming and accepting trans and non-binary folk and the LGBTQ community in general. We here at FIRST do a pretty good job of being welcoming to all people. We just hosted the Building Beloved Community Beyond the Binary Conference. We had about 125 people here, and most of those people were not from this congregation, and all of them were passionate about trans rights and trans inclusion. We continue to reach out in gentle ways to the LGBTQ groups in Syracuse. We hope we can be allies and perhaps a spiritual home for folks. May Memorial for the past 2 years has had an interim minister, Reverend Sunshine Wolf, who is trans. So here in this back eddy we call Syracuse, it can seem as if the whole UU world is open and welcoming and it's just one big rainbow celebration. Certainly we are more welcoming than most mainline denominations, but we also have had a not so great history and we have work to do. In 2015, right after the Supreme Court ruling that affirmed marriage equality was made, an article in the Religion News Service listed Unitarian Universalism as the most accepting of homosexuality and the most affirming of marriage equality. We even outranked the atheists and agnostics. How is it that we got to a place where we are out in front of other religious organizations? Because we UUs have not always been very good at fighting for LGBTQ rights. Here in Syracuse, we might lose sight of that. So I'd like to look back in our history a little bit to answer that question. In 1961, when our two denominations came together, a set of six principles was adopted by our new denomination, and the third read, to affirm, defend, and promote the supreme worth of every human personality, the dignity of man, and the use of the democratic method in human relationships. In the 70s and early 80s, there was a push to update our principles. The women's movement was having an impact, and it was clear that the language of our principles was sexist and outdated. Through a long process, as only we like to do, our current seven principles got adopted in 1984, and the first one on the list was, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That shift in language is important. The supreme worth of every human personality was replaced by inherent worth and dignity of every person. We didn't say every man. We didn't say every smart person. We did not say every person who graduated from college. We didn't say everyone who shows up on Sunday. We said and say and mean every person. Words can mean different things to different people, but to me, I hear a shift away from a hierarchy of value to a recognition that each person, each of us, is valuable in and of ourselves, and it's something that we don't have to earn. You don't have to have the right job, the right personality, the right gender, the right orientation. Whoever you are, however you love, whatever you do, you are valuable. This was big. Our UU women pushed us to have a more open attitude. And so I think it's not simply coincident that we also moved during this time to a more open stance on homosexuality and gender. It had already begun even before our women got us to rewrite our principles. In 1980, a General Assembly resolution urged the UUA to assist in the settlement of lesbian, gay, and bisexual religious leaders. The adoption of the new seven principles in 1984 pushed that forward. Transgender was not a term that existed at that time. That movement was just beginning, and the term cisgender, meaning that one's lived gender agrees with the gender that you were assigned at birth, was even further from anyone's imaginations. our language has come so far and has so far to go. This was an era where we were really trying to find ways to be more affirming, to live out that first principle, to be more inclusive. And I think this is important for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, it's important for folks in the LGBTQ community, period. Full stop. If that were the only reason for the importance, that would be enough. Because there is no good reason to discriminate against someone for their orientation or their gender. I could stop the sermon here, but I won't. I think it's also important because we are a fairly young denomination. We are the consolidation of the Unitarians and the Universalists in 1961. And up until that time, the two denominations had been part of the liberal Christian movement, more or less, to different degrees. And often, they were part of a pushback against Christianity. This means, in many ways, we are rooted in our history in a reaction against the powers that be. That is understandable, but that is not enough to hold a denomination together. This movement in the 80s to expand our welcome and affirmation of people helped to move us away from being a reaction against something, in this case, Christianity, and moved us toward being a denomination that has a value of love and acceptance at its core. I think we are still struggling with this, or at least there is still tension around this. And my prayer for us UUs for our denomination is that that tension is a creative one and not a destructive one. This movement away from Christianity is important in our movement toward being more welcoming and more inclusive. Christianity, as it has been lived out in the Western world, has been a highly colonizing religion. And in that colonization, forced people to fit into tight categories of male and female, white and heterosexual, thereby supporting white patriarchy. I love my Christian faith. If you ask me if I'm a Christian, I will proudly say I am a Christian Unitarian Universalist. But I also know that the Christian church has a horrible history of loving people, of welcoming people as they are, and of celebrating people. And so it is incredibly important to note that as we move away from institutional Christianity, we have been able to be more welcoming and affirming. Bear Bergman, in his keynote address, or described it in this way. Let me see if I can recapture his words. He said something like, imagine that all the folks who live on the margin are like a meadow. Beautiful flowers, great grasses, a diversity of plants and colors, a wonderful ecosystem. And this meadow has existed for a long time. And somebody comes along and decides that what they really need to do is make a parking lot out of the meadow. And so they just pave over it with asphalt. That would be the colonizing Christianity. Just pave over everybody's differences. And then every couple of years, you keep up the parking lot by continuing to update or add to the asphalt. But if you're not super careful about the upkeep, and even when you are, as we know by looking at our parking lot, eventually the water gets in. And in upstate New York, it freezes and it cracks the asphalt. And when the asphalt cracks, the sun gets in and the water gets in, and eventually the flowers pop up. They grow back up. I believe Bear said, like a pansy. And you're reminded that it's not a parking lot, it's a meadow. And we can be part of that meadow. And for folks who are marginalized, they are that meadow that has the asphalt over them. Anything that breaks up the colonization allows the flowers to bloom. And I think that's part of what we do as Unitarian Universalists. We push back on that colonization. And so beginning in the 80s or thereabouts, we started the work of being welcoming to gays and lesbians and bisexuals. I have spoken in earlier sermons how we didn't always do this so well, and different congregations have been better or worse, but there has been movement. The first openly trans ministers were ordained in the 1980s, but they were not able to find parishes, parish ministries, and in fact, their names have been lost to the official history. I know that there are folks in the UUA who hold these names in their hearts. And had I been a journalist, I probably would have ferreted out those names and made the phone calls. But for the purposes of this sermon, it is important to note that those names of those first trans people ordained in the 80s are not easily found. They are what we might call the first wave. They pushed against the heteronormity and the two gender assumptions that most of us live with. They did something admirable. They helped change our denomination, and they paid dearly for it. The second wave of trans religious leaders include folks like Reverend Sean Dennison, who was ordained in 2000 and was the first openly trans minister called to a parish in the UUA. His first called ministry was in Salt Lake City, Utah, of all places. Mr. Barb Grieve has also been out as a trans man for decades. He has a long career as a religious educator, and currently he is one of the two moderators of our denomination. There are other names in this second wave. Some of them I know and many I do not, but not all their stories are as public as Sean and Barb's. They are out and they are proud, and I know their path in ministry has been hard and that they have had to fight transphobia. What I do know is that up until this time, with called ministers who work in a parish who are trans, there have been no healthy ending or transitions of those called ministries. They all have ended in negotiated settlements. This is the price that these individuals pay for putting themselves in the work of justice. In this second wave, not all the names have been lost, and that is good, but the price each of these individuals have paid has been high. I know Reverend Sean in passing. I doubt he would remember who I am. I respect his work. Besides being a minister, he is an artist, and his sense of creativity is astounding. And I know that he has persevered and stepped back from parish ministry and stepped back into it again and persevered. Mr. Barb Grieve is a close and dear friend of mine. I have known him maybe 12 or 13 years. He has persevered through so much. He was in the process to become a UU minister, but stepped back in part because of the transphobia that he experienced. He remained a leader in our movement and a respected religious educator. And he was one of the founders of TRUST, Trans Religious Professionals Unitarian Universalists Together. He is a lifelong UU, and his passion for his faith is palpable, and so he perseveres. He is in the process now of re-entering the path to UU ministry. It is my hope that in the next few years I will be able to be at his ordination. Currently, he serves as co-moderator of our denomination. First of all, I find it fascinating that a religious educator is one of our co-moderators. Just, we're not even talking about that today, so that's pretty cool. But also, the other co-moderator is Alandria Williams, who I don't know personally, but I do know that they use the pronoun they and them, and they are one of the founders of Black Lives UU. This is no small thing to have two people in the co-moderator position, both of whom identify outside of the gender binary. This would not have been possible a few years ago. The co-moderators, the highest volunteer position in the Unitarian Universalist Association, are the chief governance officers for our association. They chair the UUA Board of Trustees. They facilitate the business meetings at general or business sessions at General Assembly, and they serve as an important interface with our congregations and consult with our UUA president in developing a common vision for our association. Alandria is part of what I would call the third wave of trans and non-binary folk who are moving into or have some kind of leadership in our denomination. These are folk like Reverend Sunshine at May, or Reverend Don Fortune in New Jersey, or Reverend Otto O'Connor in Massachusetts, and others who are openly trans and gender non-binary. They are feeling less pressure to conform to traditional gender identities and less pressure to be closeted. And yet it is not at all easy for this third wave. Simply because we have religious leaders and ministers, religious educators, music directors who are trans, does not necessarily mean that all are being treated well. I spoke with one seminarian recently, a trans person, who had been turned down at 2 internship opportunities because they were overqualified. Now, I get that when you're hiring somebody for a long-term position and they're overqualified, the worry is that they will move on too quickly to a job they are better suited for. But an internship is a limited-term gig. It's 1 year long. Why wouldn't you want to get the most overqualified person you could? We UUs are lucky enough to have had members and leaders who have persevered in working for transgender rights and equality, and we have a way to go. We are not done yet. We must continue to persevere. Why, you ask? Maybe inside your own head, why should we persevere? Why must we continue to try to be the best allies possible? One answer goes back to our first principle. We affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. A second answer is because we are good at this welcoming. We are good at this affirming, and the world desperately needs it. We once again hosted the Building Beloved Community Beyond the Binary Conference. Why, you might ask, did I, a middle-aged, straight, cisgender female, work so hard to make that conference happen? Why did I support so many of you who worked so hard to make that conference happen? There are many places for us to put our effort. Why transgender issues? Why LGBTQ issues? And I suppose there are many ways to answer that question. But probably the most important and the most true answer is I do this work because I am mom to 5 people who are a rainbow spectrum. They range from cisgender heterosexual to transgender polyamorous and anything in between. They have challenged me in their growing up, and some of them are still growing up. Most of the time, honestly, the challenge was they didn't do their chores and they didn't finish their dinner and they forgot to brush their teeth. But sometimes it was because they had an identity I did not understand. When my son Toby came out to me as trans, it was all new to me. But there I was, his mom. And so it fell to me to learn, to understand, and to keep on loving him. And you know, it wasn't just a responsibility. It was in my bones. Why do you think I do this work? Because at my heart, I am a mama bear, and I will be nothing less than part of a movement that makes this world more welcoming to my children and your children and you. I may not be able to change the whole world, but I can work hard to change my little corner here in Syracuse. I could have done it differently. We all know people whose families have rejected them. In this congregation, why do we do this work? We are a welcoming congregation. We have officially taken the stand that all people, no matter what gender, no matter who they love, everyone is welcome. Why this church? Maybe because it is in our bones, too. We, in our history, had a minister, David, who, while he was here, came out as gay. You loved him, and you saw his struggles, and you did not reject him for it. You loved him, and you chose to look more deeply at what it means to love. And you became more welcoming, not less. You did not have to do that, but this congregation persevered. And you know, there are other churches that have made other choices. You know that. There are many churches who have fired their ministers for coming out. But you found out that there is joy in welcoming. We don't welcome because we have to. We welcome because it is about being open to the unexpected and to welcoming joy. What an honor it is to be a place, a community, a network of relationships where people say, "Hi, glad to have you here with us this morning." And we don't welcome because we're doing somebody a favor. We have found out that our congregation is better. It is stronger. It is more loving because of all the different kinds of people we have welcomed and we are welcoming. We are much better at being a meadow than a parking lot. We are building beloved community and we are bending the arc of history toward justice, one welcome at a time. Amen and blessed be. In that spirit, I invite you to stand as you are moved and or able and join in hymn number 95, "There Is More Love Somewhere."